Welcome to Rights Radio for pet owners, pet guardians, and pets in distress. Our pets are often closer to us than our own hearts. I'm your host, Dr. Joyce Starr, and this is the inaugural program of Rights Radio for Pet Owners. Our guest today is Stephen Becker, president of Vitality Science Incorporated. That's vitalityscience.com, which supplies natural supplements for cats and dogs. Stephen is also the author of the new ebook that has the internet all abuzz, Supernatural Vitality, How to Escape the Mad Medicine Bottle, which you will find by typing in newvitalism.com, that's newvitalism.com, or by typing in starpublications.com, and that's star with two R's, S-T-A-R-R, publications.com. And you will see the cover featured on our homepage. Welcome, Stephen.
Thanks, Joyce, and thanks for having me on.
It's a real pleasure. Stephen, you've written that humans share 50% of the genetic structure of a mushroom, but we're actually closer to cats and dogs. Can you explain that?
Well, the reason why I wrote that was because of the perception, you know, somehow we're separate from the plant world, somehow we're separate from animals, somehow we're separate from the rest of life, when in fact we're totally connected. I mean, sharing 50% of the genetic structure of a mushroom, can you imagine any life form that would be more different than a human being, than a mushroom, and yet 50% of the genetic structure of a mushroom is the same as the genetic structure of a human being? And there's several important points here. One of them, of course, is part of that question that you asked. We're closer to cats and dogs than we are to mushrooms. But it's this idea of a web. That's the point. This idea that everything is connected. So when we eat mushrooms, our bodies understand them. Because we already have the code inside. Mushrooms talk to our bodies, in a sense. And our bodies talk back, and they know each other. They're like brothers. And it's not just mushrooms, but it's pine trees, and it's all plant life. It's all the part of the living genome of the planet. Snake poison is another interesting example. Our bodies understand snake poison. But if you get bit with a poisonous snake, you could die. But if you take that poison and dilute it, and then inject it in slowly increasing concentrations, you will become immune to snake poison. And the reason for that is because your body understands snake poison. It could kill your body, but your body knows what it is. It's nothing unknown.
But we're closer to cats and dogs, you say. So can we talk about that?
But we're closer to cats and dogs. And there's a... It's a web, but there are also life forms on that web. And cats and dogs and all mammals, of course, animals that have live births and that nurse their young, are all connected. And human beings are mammals that have live births and nurse their young. And even more than that, this idea that animals, cats and dogs in particular, because we've taken them into our homes and into our hearts, this idea that animals are emblematic of our consciousness, that they tell us something about ourselves. Cats, for example, tell us about our emotional lives, how to remain calm. Well known that if you take cats or dogs into old age homes, into hospitals, or for people who have serious mental problems or just normal people, that they produce a calming effect. People who have pets live longer. And they live longer not just because they're kind of nice, furry, warm things, but because they inform, they fill out a part of what it means to be a human being.
Well, Stephen, today our topic is pet digestive health. So clearly we want our pets to be as healthy as possible, but it's a very difficult problem for most people to know what they should feed their cat or their dog or other pets for that matter. Can you help clarify that matter, bring some light to that question?
It's a very interesting question, and And what I say to people is that they need to discover on their own what it is that will work for that animal, because in the way that every human eats a slightly different diet, some things work in some human bodies and others don't. Some people can eat chocolate, others can't, and so on. The same thing is true with cats and dogs. You can't say there's one diet that will work for every cat or every dog or even every Bengal or every Schnauzer or every Labrador Retriever. There is no one diet, but there are certain basic precepts. This is the same as they are for humans. No junk.
No junk food for your pet.
No junk food for your pet. No junk food. So then that begs the question,
What is junk food?
What is junk food? And that's what I write about in the several books that I've written on vitalism, and that's what I try to clarify in the book, Escape the Mad Medicine Bottle and Supernatural Vitality. What I try to deliver to people is a perspective. How do you get a perspective that helps you to understand what constitutes real food for your pet and for yourself? Because they go together. I mean, you ever notice how people's pets look like them? I mean, it's kind of scary in a way. I mean, people actually have pets that reflect their personalities. They're part of a unit. They're part of a family and a package. And, of course, pet owners feel this.
To clarify that a bit further, when we're saying no junk food for your pet, and I'd like you to go into what constitutes junk food, but I'd also like you to talk about the difference between mainline food, and of course the controversy surrounding this is quite fierce, and organic food. Is organic food always better for your pet? Should we always defer to the organic food shelves if possible? And if so, which organic food? How do we know whether it's really wonderful or perhaps no better or worse than mainline food?
Great question, Joyce. And a tough one, too.
Okay.
And a tough one. Especially for cats. Especially for cats. And this is the reason why. Cats are cats. They're finicky. And for many people, the first and biggest problem, and almost the only problem, is will the cat eat it? If you can't get your cat to eat it, it doesn't matter if it's organic or natural. You've got to get the cat to eat it. And there are cats out there that will only eat junk, like humans. Like humans. You can't get them off of the Coca-Cola and the hot dogs. Well, it's the same with cats. They get used to eating hairball formula, and they don't want to eat anything else. That's all they want to eat. They stick their nose up at any other food. Now, in cases like that, what I suggest is supplementation. See if you can get some supplements into them. Some fish oils is always a good idea. We have fish oils, of course, that we sell, very, very sophisticated formulations. That's always a good idea. There are other ingredients that are very beneficial for cats, things like colostrum, certain mineral mixes. Supplements are a good idea, especially for finicky cats that will only eat junk. So that's the first thing. Will the cat eat it? Now the second thing, organic food. Is organic always better? Well, if your cat will eat it, it's always better. And it's always better for a lot of reasons. One of those is that studies done on the mineral content of vegetables, and this is done by the United States Department of Agriculture. They do it every year. They take a cross-section of tomatoes and squashes and corn, and they do an analysis to graph out the mineral content of the plants. And what they have found, they've been doing it since 1929, the mineral content of commercial plants, that means plants that are sprayed with insecticides, fertilized with synthetic fertilizers, those plants, the mineral content has been falling every year since 1929. They're practically, they look fine, but they're really very sick plants. Whereas organic plants are plants that are, and organic, I don't even like the word organic. I don't even like that word. Organic, what does that mean? I think they should switch the terms. It should be commercial, I call them poison plants, which are actually poisoned, and plants like your great-great-great-great-grandfather ate. They're just plants grown in soil with compost. They're just plants or animals that are fed on those plants. So let's take chicken, which a lot of cats like, and some cats are allergic to, by the way. But let's take chicken. You take chickens that are raised in those industrial chicken factories where they have 1 square foot of space with the lights on 22 or 23 or 24 hours a day. Many of them are fed amphetamines. They're crazy chickens. They're so nuts, they'll peck each other's eyes out if you don't cut off the ends of their beaks. Some of them commit suicide by pulling out their feathers. And then these animals are slaughtered. They're put into actually what's called a fecal soup. So the water is full of chicken feces, which is absorbed by the chicken's body. 15% of chicken weight for commercial chickens is fecal soup. And then all the hormones, all the drugs, all the tension, all the despair is then cut up and sold at your local supermarket. And also, even worse parts are cut up and made into cat food. Whereas organic chicken, for example, is a chicken. It's just a chicken. It's a chicken that runs around in a yard, eats bugs, eats rocks. It's a chicken. That's it. And they taste better. You know they're better. I mean, they're real chickens. You get, when you eat, in a sense, we are what we eat. Not exactly. But in a way, we are what we eat. When we eat foods that are naturally grown, that are free from chemical contamination, that are not genetically modified, that are just part of our living web, like mushrooms, you know, like living parts of the biome. When we eat those, we inform our bodies. A message is given of vitality, of wellness, of gratitude. And it's the same for animals. It's the same for animals. Feeding animals a daily diet of extruded whatever, cereals, essentially is what they are, which are these commercial dry cat foods, it's a disaster. It's a miracle that cats can live through it, and of course many of them don't. They die young. Cats typically die young from feline leukemia, from undiagnosable diseases. Cats, and I'm sure this will shock the listeners, cats should live to be in their 20s and 30s and 40s at least. The oldest cat on record was 45. Ate nothing but raw mice, organic mice.
Organic mice?
Organic mice, right. The mice. They're just mice. They ate the mice.
So you're questioning the word organic. It's a fancy word for going back to the reality of the 1900s.
Well, yes. I eat the food and feed your animals the food that your great-great-great-grandfather could have eaten or could have fed his animals. That is real food. If we don't do that, then we hazard a communication breakdown. Our bodies and the bodies of our animals and our pets no longer are able to make sense out of what's put into their bodies. And when the body doesn't make sense out of what's coming in, confusion reigns. And one word we have, when confusion becomes obvious, it's called a disease. It's called a disease. So we might call it feline leukemia, let's say, if it's cats. Or if it's dogs, it could be one of the many forms of canine cancer, which is epidemic in dogs right now. Almost every dog over the age of 10 has cancer.
And why?
Why?
Is that?
Well,
glad I asked the question.
Yeah. One thing is the vaccines.
Okay.
And maybe the vaccines per se, or it could be the adjuvants that are put into the vaccines or the preservatives. Adjuvants are substances put into vaccines for animals and humans that enhance the effect of the vaccine. And preservatives, of course, preserve the vaccine. A vaccine is part of a living substance. It's viruses, it's animal tissues. It's a living substance, and it goes bad. It's got to be refrigerated, and it has to have preservatives in it. And one of those preservatives, which we believe is causing the epidemic of dog cancer, is formaldehyde. Formaldehyde, the stuff that they embalm dead people with, is in the vaccines for dogs and cats.
And is that every vaccine or selective vaccines?
No, it's in some vaccines, and other vaccines have different preservatives in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's very difficult to know from the label exactly what is in what vaccine. Often the label doesn't tell you.
Well, how would you see the label? You take your cat or dog into the vet. They say it's the annual shots. You have to have them, especially the rabies vaccine, of course. If you don't have it, you're liable to prosecution. Terrible things can happen to you, the pet owner. So you're really a victim in this situation. You really can't question much beyond which vaccine he needs or she needs that particular year. You're told that you don't, right?
That's correct. That's why I recommend people fire their vet. Don't go to the vet. Go to a holistic vet. Now, a holistic vet is a person who went to a veterinary college and got a degree as a doctor of veterinary medicine, a DVM, exactly the same as the regular vet down the street. The difference is that person, and I've met many of them, students who specialize in holistic and natural medicine, the difference is that person looks at the whole animal. So while a holistic vet, of course, is required by law to give certain vaccines, there's no avoiding that one unless you don't go to vets at all, which we don't for our animals. But we have a lot of experience. There's a difference. And a lot of breeders don't either. A lot of breeders do most of their veterinary work themselves. They give their own vaccines. They give their own medicines. You know, because vets are so expensive, and many of them, and this is a kind of a dirty little secret, which isn't really dirty. I think it's a clean little secret myself. A lot of breeders forge the vaccine certificates. How's that for a shocking piece of information?
Well, truthfully, I was thinking today, what if you were to have you purchase or you adopt a new little cat or dog and you simply didn't take it to the vet, so it was never registered anywhere? Well, would you be risking that pet's life in another sense, because perhaps some vaccines are absolutely essential? Perhaps some visits will really be life-saving. How do you balance those two in your own mind?
Good question. Excellent question, and very, very difficult to answer. But certain general points can be made. Whenever a human or an animal has a condition which is life-threatening, now, of course, the question is, how do you know? But,
right.
I mean, you've got to use your intuition here. You've got to, I mean, it's not like a dog that throws up or a cat that throws up or a cat that kind of is a little bit generally healthy but now is a little bit lethargic just for a day or two. It's not that. But you need to know your animal. You need to know what your animal is eating. And you need to know yourself and your children, for that matter. If you have a situation that is life-threatening, you have to go to a vet or a doctor. You got to. I mean, that's what they're good at. They're not good at a lot, but treating life-threatening situations, if you have the right vet and the right doctor, that's what they're good at. And that's why I recommend holistic vets, because they're regular doctors of veterinary medicine. They're trained to see when a condition is life-threatening, and you go to your holistic vet or your holistic doctor, and they may say, if it's a human, which is a better example because humans talk to you. In humans, the flu and meningitis look very close to the same. It's the same symptoms. Your kid gets the flu, but how do you know it's not meningitis? So one will kill the kid, or could very well kill the child, and the other one is you just get over it in a few days and you'll be fine. How do you know the difference? You have to really be sensitive to the child's general health, to the kind of diet they're on, to the animal's general health, to the kind of diet they're on. And you have to use You have to be sensitive to what's going on.
Well, there, I think you're, just to interrupt you for a moment here, I think the operative word is empathetic. And
yes.
Taking the time to identify and really relate to the pet. I'm appalled by the supermarket version of some pet clinics where you walk in and the vet will come in and see the pet for about 2 minutes or 3 minutes if you're lucky, and then walk out and turn it over to a technician. It really pains me to see that situation.
No rapport.
No rapport.
No connection. No sense of the sacred. And that's a key. That's a key. I mean, if life is not sacred, then nothing is. If life is sacred, then all life is sacred, and certainly even more so those members of your family, which includes your cats and your dogs, or your lizards, or your snakes, or whatever the animals are that you bring into your home. I mean, it has to be included in one sense of the sacred, and the Egyptians knew this very well. The Egyptians knew it. They were specialists in perceiving the sacred connections that exist between cats, and of course your Egyptian cats are quite famous, and dogs. Anubis was their dog god who guarded the gates of the other world. They were very tuned into the way in which animals reveal ourselves and their sacred qualities. I mean, if we're going to, in the 1800s, a very famous philosopher, his name was René Descartes, he said that when an animal is in pain, it's like the squeak of a wheel. The animal's not really in pain. It's just mechanical. And that kind of belief, that mechanical belief, this idea that the whole world is just made up of little tinker toy parts that are sort of put together, is at the root of the complete collapse of the health of not only our animals, but humans too.
Well, let's talk for a moment about the fact that some animals are on the best food, just like humans are on a strict organic diet, and yet those pets are still sick a good bit of the time, or quite a bit of the time. Why is that?
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Now, what your vets will say is that it's genetic, but of course that's only a half of an answer. Of course, there are genetic predispositions, but the question is, what is causing these genetic predispositions to occur in a greater and greater frequency every year? Why is it that we have more and more sick animals, animals dying younger, animals with more problems? Why is that? And I think the answers are well known, especially to your breeders and your holistic vets. They know. One, the big industry of puppy mills and kitten mills, where the animals are bred too young, they're weaned too soon, they're over-vaccinated, they're fed food of questionable quality, very questionable quality. I mean, the kinds of foods that are approved by AFCO, the American Association of Feed Control Officers, it's shocking. I mean, it's shocking. I mean, AFCO thinks that ground-up leather is a suitable food for cats and dogs.
What do you mean by that?
Leather. Just, you know, ground-up.
Actual leather?
Yeah. Yeah, they think that's okay. And they think now,
are you being facetious? Are you being a little bit facetious? Or are they actually advocating that
dogs could eat
leather?
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, you could never be facetious with these guys, because no matter how bizarre and ridiculous a suggestion could be for animal food, they buy it. I mean, they buy everything. And they certify. It's just a process. It takes about 2 years. And if there's anything, I mean, of course, in a sense, leather is a substance that can be metabolized. It's an animal skin, you know, so it can be eaten in a sense. But, and people do who are on the verge of starvation, they'll chew on leather. I mean, that's certainly true. But that doesn't mean that it's the kind of food that you want to feed to your cats and dogs. But it's not just leather. It's worse. It's awful beyond words. One of the things, cats and dogs like things that have a slight greasy taste. So oil is, you know, can be relatively expensive. Even the cheap commercial oils that are in the supermarket are relatively expensive when you're talking about producing 50 pounds of Old Roy for $9, you know, at the Walmart. So, you know, at those price points, any kind of oil is too expensive. So what they do is they collect old fryer grease, you know, the stuff that they used to throw out. They don't throw it out anymore. No, they strain it and sell it to the pet food manufacturers. And they then take this old fryer grease, which, of course, is cardiac arrest, you know, in a grease form, and they spray it onto cat and dog food. Now, that's perfectly fine with AFCO. AFCO has no problem with that. Grease, yeah, it's a good idea. I mean, this is what they, the kind of stuff they have in commercial cat and dog food. How about ground up cats and dogs? That ought to make everybody's hair stand on end. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, no problem. No problem. AFCO thinks it's perfectly fine. So they euthanize the cats and dogs at the local shelter, and then they collect the bodies, grind them up, and put them into your cat and dog food. Oh, it's beyond belief.
This has been validated and researched.
Oh, yeah.
There's scientific proof and evidence, et cetera.
Oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it.
Well, it's the first I've heard of it, and I hate to think that that's what I've been feeding my cat, a beloved cat. I've been feeding what an atrocity.
Oh, it's absolutely
well, how
an atrocity.
Are we supposed to know that? And that's, of course...
Buy products from companies that have integrity, that actually believe in the I'm trying to find the right word. I don't know that sacred is the right word. I mean, it's the right word for me, and it's probably the right word for you, Joyce, but these companies care about cats and dogs. It's not just a business. And there's lots of those companies out there, and while we're talking here, I'm trying to scroll through and find the name of a book I can recommend to your readers who have a hard time believing that, I mean, a hard time believing that this can actually be the case. Yeah, here it goes. Let's see. Dog Food Secrets. There you go. Try that one out. If you doubt in any way the unbelievably disgusting substances that are put into commercial cat and dog food, read Dog Food Secrets. It also applies to cats. It's the same thing. They just use the worst garbage. But go ahead, Joyce.
Okay. Let's talk about some animals are already in a later stage of health, and maybe the owner has been told that they're acutely ill and they don't have much time. Does it make sense at that point to introduce organic or extremely healthy food to your pet to dramatically change the diet when the cat is or dog is in dire stress?
Well, often in cases like that, the vet will recommend that the animal be put down. If it's a regular vet, they'll just say put the animal down because they give up and they throw in the towel and they put the animal down. We do not believe in putting animals down ever unless there is absolutely no quality of life. If the animal is enjoying their life, let them enjoy their life. What's the difference? If they're not in pain, if they're getting up, we had a 20-year-old Yorkie that had no teeth. The Yorkie had no teeth, was blind, couldn't see a thing. We had to have the little bowl raised up so the dog could eat, and the dog was perfectly happy. And then one day it just fell over and died. It was 20. Yorkies don't tend to live that long to begin with. 20 was a very old age for a Yorkie. And the point being that we need to let animals go on and enjoy their lives without succumbing to veterinarians who give up on them and say they need to be put down. That's number one. And number two, what can we do? Which was the beginning of your question. What can we do? Well, I mean, just start from the beginning. No more tap water. Your openers, no tap water. At the very least, filter the tap water, because tap water has got so many things in it. So many. They're finding antibiotics in tap water. They're finding birth control drugs in tap water, because the birth control pills go down the drain, goes into the reservoir, they filter it through sand, they put in fluorine, and it comes right back out your tap. Don't give it to your cats and don't drink it yourself. No tap water. That's the first thing. Bottled water, or get a good filter at the very least. A good filter will do a lot. It won't take the fluorine out, but it will do a lot.
What if you boil the water?
It makes it worse.
Why?
Because it's a toxic stew. And one way that chemists use to make new chemical compounds is to heat it. Yeah, boiling, don't do it. Boiling is only effective to get living organisms out of the water. So if the water is contaminated, say, with E. coli from fecal material, then boiling it will get the living organisms, will kill them, because the heat will kill them. But the chemicals, they're resistant. To break those chemicals down, you need temperatures of thousands of degrees, which doesn't happen on your stove. Your stove is up to maybe 300 degrees, maybe 400 degrees. And it's not enough to break those chemicals down. And even so, even when they break down, you have to be mindful of what those breakdown products are. A perfect example is DDT. DDT actually breaks down in the soil. But what it breaks down to is just as toxic as the DDT.
Well, what about boiling water for your coffee? Does that mean we're actually drinking toxic coffee?
Absolutely.
Oh, my.
Absolutely. The quality of water delivered through municipal systems is appalling. It's appalling. I mean, they're finding all sorts of chemicals in there. Antibiotics turned up a few years ago. There's a lot of antibiotics in municipal water supplies. Of course, they add two very toxic chemicals, chlorine and fluorine, which are extremely toxic.
But may I ask then, if we are providing our pets with bottled water, oftentimes that bottled water is not even as good as the tap water, or maybe the same, or just slightly better. Now, what about boiling filtered water? Would that be an optimal solution?
If you get a Brita filter, which I recommend to people, it's cheap and it's good. I mean, it's not the best. We use a filter that costs maybe $700, our filter costs. But if you use a Brita filter, it costs a few bucks, and it has activated silver in it. And silver is antibacterial. And it has carbon, a carbon block. So that carbon block will take out a lot of the organic chemicals, and it will also take out a lot of the organisms. The Brita filter, I mean, especially if you're on a budget, you can't beat it. But it doesn't take out the fluorine, and fluorine is bad. But that said, Brita filter is way better than nothing.
But
way
does
better.
It take out enough for your pet? If you begin with filtered water or superior bottled water, and I'm not sure exactly what is superior bottled water, because oftentimes I'll buy a bottled water that tastes much better than the superior brand. And I'm sure that most listeners would suspect that there's quite an industry going on there, and it's not always what you see. It's not what you get. So how do we provide water to our pets? What is the optimal solution?
I'm saying that the best solution, you know, particularly for people who are on a little bit of a tight budget, is your Brita filter. Don't worry about boiling it. Just run it through that filter.
Even if it's tap water?
Tap water, sure.
What if you used filtered water, though? Would that be really much better or great
bottled water? Well, they've got pretty good filters at the Walmart. I mean, those machines are put together by Culligan. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're not great, but they're good. They're not bad. They work, and they do take a lot of things out,
okay.
And they're decent. And it's very low cost. Once you buy the bottle, it's very low cost to get that water from that machine. So, it's always a question of what can we do within the confines of our time and our budget. And if you're talking about time and budget, I mean, you're talking about a Brita filter, you're talking about the Culligan filter at the Walmart. They work. They work, and they're way, way better than nothing. And if you got a lot of money, or not even a lot, but if you can afford $500 or $1,000 for a filter, then, you know, you can start to look at reverse osmosis filters. You can look at micro water filters. That's what we use. We use a micro water filter. There are a lot of good filters out there.
If your pet is sick, might better water be a solution? And what about salt in the water, especially in a natural salt in the water? Is it safe to put salt in the water for the pet? Some people have written about it. I've written a great deal about salt, but not about salt for in pet water, because I don't believe that there's scientific proof one way or the other, and I wouldn't want to, you know, do that without some scientific evidence, but nonetheless, I'd like your opinion.
Well, we don't use salt for our pets,
okay.
And I do mention salt in one of my books, and salt is a very complex issue. It's far more complex than most people realize. The salt that most people call salt, which is sodium chloride, is actually mined from antediluvian salt deposits that are 100 million years old. And then it's steam distilled at 3,500 degrees and fractionated so that you only get pure sodium chloride. And that pure sodium chloride, 95% of the manufactured sodium chloride in the country goes to industries who need a pure sodium chloride. The other 5%, which is a terrible idea, goes to human consumption, which you should never consume this substance because it's called salt, but it's not salt. It is a salt. It is a sodium salt of chlorine. There's no question about that. It is, which is a chemical name, but it's not real salt. Real salt is dehydrated ocean, at least, at the very least. And the stuff you buy at the supermarket called salt is not dehydrated ocean. It's a chemically fractionated product. So that I would never put in an animal's food. No way.
Or their water.
Or their water.
Right, because, again, a number of people have written and advocated putting some premium salts, and, again, not your daily table salt, but premium salts, putting about a quarter of a teaspoon or maybe even much less than that into the water of your pet for optimal health, and I'm not sure that I trust that.
Well, I think a tiny pinch, certainly not a quarter of a teaspoon,
mm-hmm.
but a tiny pinch of your much better quality salts
mm-hmm.
could be okay. I don't know. I agree with you. There's no scientific evidence for it.
Right.
But it may very well be beneficial and probably would not hurt your pet a tiny bit. Just a tiny, tiny bit. Remember, animals seek out salt deposits.
Mm-hmm.
They seek them out. Deer seek them out. Bears seek them out. They seek out salt deposits. So there's something going on there. And if you have a substance like real salt, for example, real salt is a brand name of a salt you can buy at any health food store, your Whole Foods or wherever. And it is a salt that is mined in Montana from antediluvian salt deposits, and they don't do anything to it. They just sort of dust it off and put it in bottles. That's the salt we use in our house here. Now, that salt, yeah, that's probably good for your cat or dog. It's certainly okay, a small amount. I mean, it's a very therapeutic salt.
All right, but just a pinch if you plan to go in that direction.
Yeah, just a pinch.
All right. You've talked a great deal about spiritual matters, yet you also give enormous practical advice. Can you talk about how you merge the two in your own practice and your own company and your life?
Well, that has been the focus of all my writing over the years and a lot of my thinking. And it's an extremely important issue. And it is extremely important because I believe it's the antidote to the hyper-materialism of our age. Hyper-materialism is a discredited philosophy, but it's the only reason it's still around. It's around in food and medicine because it's beneficial for large multinational corporations to have a philosophy that will easily sell their goods and services. It's a hyper-materialistic philosophy. So when organic, for example, is ridiculed by the government, it routinely is ridiculed by the government. The United States Department of Agriculture has had an ongoing fight with the European Union over the introduction of beef grown with hormones. And the European Union wants it labeled. The American government says that it's ridiculous to label it, because when you measure the amount of hormones in the cow's body after it's slaughtered, it's exactly the same as what would be in its body if hormones were not administered. So for that reason, they're saying the animal's exactly the same as an animal that wasn't given hormones. That is a material description. The spiritual description, or the vitalistic description, is that the cow not only was given hormones, but it grew in 18 months on half the feed, and it was junk feed. I mean, for years they were feeding cows ground-up cows, which a cow is an herbivore. It's not a carnivore. You can't feed a cow ground-up cows. They're feeding cows ground-up cows. We know we've got these epidemics of tremendous diseases among cows, and they're giving them steroids, the steroids that are illegal for athletes, with the big controversy with the football players and the baseball players with the steroids. Those steroids they're giving the cows. And so the steroid-pumped styrofoam cow being fed junk food, developing in half the time on half the feed, and the United States government wants to say that's the same as a cow that eats grass, that's a regular cow. They want to call that the same because the levels of hormones are the same. And it's ridiculous. So in order to avoid that kind of trap, that material trap, in which they say, here's the amount of proteins, here's the amount of fats, here's the amount of hormones, and compare it to this steroid-fed styrofoam cow to this organic one, and they both have the same amount, and therefore they're the same. That's a trap. That's a trap. And the only way out of that trap is another perspective. It's like a bird. A bird's got to have two wings. If it only has one wing, materialism, for example, it flies around in circles. Or if it only has the other wing, spiritualism or vitalism, in which nothing matters because we're all going to end up in the grave anyway, you go right around in circles and your life is full of misery. Either way, but if you put them both together, and if you say, look, I'm going to stand in a place in which I can see the kinds of connections that exist between all plants and animals and humans, and yet at the same time, be aware of the hormone levels, the proteins, the carbohydrates, the fats and oils, and put the two of those together, then I know that I'm going to make the best possible choices. It might not always be the right choice. I can't even give advice on that one because it's too indeterminate. But it's going to be the best choice that you can come up with at the time. Whereas if you take one position or the other, you're going to be a bird with one wing. You're going to go in circles. The doctors will say, the vets will say, for example, feed your dog Alpo. Alpo is okay. I mean, Alpo is better than nothing. But they use meat byproducts. You know, they use low-quality meats. They use downed animals, animals that when they're coming to the slaughterhouse go down and, you know, are actually so sick they can't even walk into the slaughterhouse. They cut those up. They use animal byproducts, which, you know, God knows, everything you can think of on an animal, ground up and put into the, put into the food. You know, so from a material viewpoint, which is their viewpoint, you take that canned food, and I don't want to pick on Alpo alone. I mean, Alpo is actually pretty decent, you know, compared to some of the other junk that's out there. But when you take a look at that can, and you see it has a certain amount of protein, because it has to in order to be approved. It can't be approved unless it does. It has to have a certain protein level. It has to have a certain amount of fats. It has to have a certain amount of minerals and nutritive substances, and they're all listed on the label. And it's true. It's true. It does. And it will support the life of your dog. That is true. But it's far, far from optimum food.
In other words, your dog or your cat will live and might live many years, 10, 11, 12, but perhaps could have lived 20 years, could have lived more on a different type of diet. The problem perhaps is that the dog or the cat is looking quite fine and quite happy and energetic, and then one day they aren't. One day they're suddenly in distress.
Correct.
In fact, That is the entire objective of this radio show, is to help pet owners and pets in distress. Because when that moment comes, and it usually comes suddenly, you have no idea, most pet owners have no idea where to turn. They're frantic. They rush the pet from one doctor to another. They usually amass enormous bills in a very short time. It can be thousands within a week or two or three, and then ongoing treatments that can also run into the thousands, and the pet soon leaves the planet. It's really quite quite tragic and sad for the pet owner. And so I think what you've written for humans, you've written a wonderful book, Supernatural Vitality, How to Escape the Mad Medicine Bottle. And again, click in, type in newvitalism.com or star with two R, starpublications.com, and you'll find that ebook. But you've written it for humans, and yet the message is the same for pets. Can you elaborate on that for a moment?
The message is the same, and I think that was the first question that you asked, Joyce, was about the mushrooms and the cats, how close we are to them. We're very, very close to cats and dogs evolutionarily in terms of the species, in terms of what it means to be a mammal, to deliver live young, to nurse the young. We're very, very close to them. And the kinds of choices that I find inevitably, people who are eating organic food, almost immediately after they make that decision, they start thinking about feeding their cats and dogs better, because they're a member of the family. Why would you feed your cat junk food and you're going to Whole Foods and eating organic? People don't do it. They buy, and the fastest rising component of the pet industry is organic food, rising very, very quickly. Very, very quickly. It's the same thing. It's the same. It's the perspective. It's the perspective. Are you working with both sides of the picture? Does the eagle of your consciousness have two wings, or is it flying around in circles and constantly being victimized by a kind of materialistic foolishness, by the rhetoric of multinational corporations, by the vested interests of government and so-called scientists? Or do you have a perspective that can cut through that fog and see what is valuable, what is real, what is vitalistic, what makes a difference not only in your life, but in your animal's life? Now, that said, people who are organic still can die young. Cats and dogs who get the best possible care and who never get vaccinated can still die young. There are no guarantees in life. There are no guarantees. But what there is the opportunity to make better choices. And to do that, we need a perspective that enables us to make those choices and to escape this mad medicine bottle.
Do you think that our pets perhaps are leading the way? Because we perhaps sometimes care more about them than we do about ourselves. And therefore, the pet is taking us down the road that we need to travel?
Funny you should ask that question. I have a lot of clients who feed their animals better than they feed themselves. They're more concerned about the health of their animal than they are about themselves. Because we sell supplements for animals, and all our supplements are human grade, and people say, oh, that would be good for me, but I have to give it to my cat or my dog. And then I answer them, you know, what are you talking about? You know, you have to take care of yourself so that you can take care of your cat and dog. If you are not healthy, you can't take care of your cat or dog. It's not just your physical health. It's your mind. You won't make the right decisions. So, yeah, they're very, very linked. But it is interesting that many people start from the other direction. So the people don't start being organic. They start feeding their animals organic, and then they think, gee, maybe I should go down this road.
Now, when I go to the pet store and look at all the different organic options, it's a potpourri, and one has no idea what is the best choice or even how to balance hard food versus soft food. They all make outstanding claims for their product. They're all the very best, the very latest, the most recent. And the number of vitamins showing up on the shelves now for pets is vitamins and all types of cure-alls is just enormous. It's mind-boggling in a way. How do you make your way through it?
It is. Well, we have certain guidelines that we use in formulating for cats and dogs. The ingredients should be something that's connected up to the health of cats and dogs throughout history. So one of the ingredients we use is colostrum, for example. Colostrum is the first expression of a mammal after giving birth. It's the first milk of a mammal after giving birth. And it's full of these, like, antibodies, and it's full of all these great things for the immune system. It was used by Dr. Jonas Salk before he invented the polio vaccine. It was used to treat polio, actually. It's a marvelous, marvelous substance, and it's totally natural. It applies to any species, cat, dog, human, cow. Of course, we get it from cows. And the history is known. It's been used for thousands of years. And it's those kinds of supplements that I recommend to people. What I do not recommend are things that are too much of a chemical, too much extracted, too much like a pharmaceutical. I try to be very, very careful with those kinds of supplements. And also, they shouldn't taste bad.
And they can be overprescribed. In other words, you can have too many supplements. Don't
feed
your
gosh,
cat or dog
absolutely.
Too many supplements.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I often warn people on that subject. And any supplements that you start with, you'll want to start real small amounts and gradually build up until you get to a spot where you think you're getting the right kinds of responses. Now, holistic vet is beneficial in this area for people who have a hard time figuring out on their own. Holistic vets are beneficial. Our website has a lot of information. There's a lot of information up on the web. I don't think there's any way to avoid studying. You got to study. Otherwise, you're a victim because someone will come along and tell you, yeah, you should use such and such and such and such. How do you know? And now we have this wonderful Internet. Just go up to the Internet, look it up, see what's being said, see what other pet owners are saying. Go to the chat rooms. Educate yourself. Education, education, education. That's the way to avoid the mad medicine bottle.
Well, another way is to have the opportunity to speak to somebody like yourself who's so caring and empathetic and so knowledgeable and has been in this business for a very long time with great success and tremendous testimonials on your website, vitalityscience.com. We just have about two more minutes here, and I'd like to give you an opportunity to expand on anything that you said before and perhaps to enlighten our listeners with a closing thought or two.
Well, I think I'd like to go back to that unfinished thought about the snake poison, which is a great story. I tell it all the time, but it's a marvelous story.
Okay.
If you dilute snake poison and inject it into the body in increasing concentrated doses, your body will become immune to the snake poison because your body understands snake poison. Your body understands mushrooms. Your body understands natural food. It doesn't understand genetically modified food at all, but that's a different issue. But it understands the natural world. There's a resonance between the two. But if you take a substance like dioxin, which is a byproduct of paper manufacture, it's one of the most toxic substances on the planet. One drop in an Olympic-sized swimming pool is enough to poison people. If you take that, dilute it down, inject it into your body in increasingly concentrated doses, you will never become immune to it. In fact, you will become more allergic to it. It is that toxic. And the reason? Because your body does not understand dioxin. It does not understand genetically modified food. It does not understand, for that matter, most pharmaceuticals, which are completely new molecules. Confusion reigns. It reigns in the animal's body. It reigns in the human bodies. Be very, very, very careful when you take any substance which is new.
Well, this is a wonderful closing thought. Beware the mad medicine bottle. And it's time to close now, and I want to thank you so much for appearing on our inaugural show. And this is Dr. Joyce Starr thanking Stephen Becker for appearing with us today, and I hope you enjoyed the show.
Thanks, Joyce.
Okay, bye.
Bye-bye.